From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Ray Suarez. This is On Point. A bombshell from the Trump administration yesterday. Nearly 200,000 people from El Salvador, allowed to work and live in the U.S. for years, must leave the country in the next 18 months. They are by far the largest group of immigrants with temporary protected status, TPS, granted after a pair of earthquakes devastated the country in 2001. Yesterday's announcement sent shockwaves through the community and comes on the heels of similar reversals affecting Haitians, Nicaraguans, and soon, potentially, Hondurans. This hour on Point, what's next for Salvadorans and others after this latest consequential immigration move? You can join us on air or online. What do you make of the Trump administration ending temporary protected status? Salvadorans, Haitians, with TPS gone, what are you planning to do now? Joining me now from Miami, Florida, is Alan Gomez, immigration reporter for USA Today. Alan, welcome back to On Point.
Thanks for having me, Ray.
Well, had the smart money been on exactly this move from the Trump administration, what had you been hearing before the declaration was made?
Well, I mean, it seemed pretty clear where this was headed because of the actions that they've taken on other TPS countries in recent months. So El Salvador, while by far the biggest number of people that will be affected, in previous months, the Department of Homeland Security has announced that they will terminate TPS for Sudan, Nicaragua, and Haiti. So now we have 4 out of 10 countries that were listed as TPS countries. All of their protections are being phased out. They extended protections for Hondurans, but only for 6 months, and indicated that that may end as well when they have to make that decision by this July. And so if you eliminate all 5 of those, that's pretty much 90-some percent of the TPS population. So we saw it was headed in this direction. But with this many Salvadorans, almost 200,000 using it, there was some hope that they would come to a different conclusion.
With this change in status, did the United States government have to make a judgment that it announced as part of the process that El Salvador was a better place than it was when TPS standards were granted?
Exactly. And that, so what happens is when a country is first designated as a TPS country, there has to be a finding that there is either an ongoing armed conflict, some kind of environmental disaster like an earthquake or a hurricane, or some other extraordinary and temporary condition. And once those conditions have been resolved, then the country is removed from TPS status. The difference with the Trump administration is how they define that, whether a country has recovered. The last time TPS was extended for the Salvadorans in 2016, the Department of Homeland Security issued a very long explanation about all the things that still trouble the Central American country, from the violence that rages there to their ongoing struggles with tropical storms and other disasters that have made it difficult to continue recovering from the original earthquake. Now the Department of Homeland Security is saying we're only going to look at what happened from that hurricane. We feel that they've rebuilt enough roads and rebuilt enough homes. All those other things like violence, we're not factoring that in. And so based solely on their recovery from that hurricane, we feel that they've come far enough and they no longer need that TPS status.
Let's talk about the TPS holders themselves. It seems from the statistics that they jumped into American life with both feet, huh?
Yeah, I mean, this is when you look at the numbers of these folks, it sounds every bit like the immigrant story that this country has been founded on. There's about 195,000 of them in the country, and the El Salvadorian Embassy in Washington estimates that of those that are 25 or over, 95% are employed. That's a staggering number. It means that they're here, that they're working. Each year they pay about $500,000 into Medicare and Social Security. They account for about $3 billion a year in the U.S.'s GDP. Zillow estimates that they contribute about $100 million a year in property taxes. The El Salvadoran Embassy estimates that more than half of them own homes, and they have produced about 192,000 children children. So all of those are U.S. citizens. All of those are being born and raised here in the United States. So, yeah, they very much have jumped in. They mostly live around the Washington, D.C. area, Houston, Los Angeles, New York. And, yeah, they jumped straight in, and they've been very active members of our economy.
Those places you mention are all homes to large existing Central American communities. Does this TPS population comprise a large share of the Salvadoran population of the United States?
It does. I mean, it absolutely does. There's, because what you have are these folks. And then in recent years, obviously, we've been seeing a lot more illegal immigration coming from Central America. But yeah, the El Salvadoran population that is on TPS status, that could draw that straight line that they were affected by the hurricane or by the earthquake and thus cannot get back. Yeah, it does make up a very big part of that community.
I want to bring in someone directly affected by yesterday's decision from the Trump administration. Irma Flores is a Salvadoran immigrant with temporary protected status. She joins us from Somerville, Massachusetts. Irma, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Ray. How are you?
Well, I'm sure you were waiting for this news and hoping for the best. Have you thought about what you're going to do now?
Sure. I'm still in shock. Has been a really difficult for me and my family, and I can imagine for the rest of the almost 200,000 hardworking immigrants who were granted with the TPS status. I don't have a plan yet because, you know, when they granted this TPS status, it was a hope. This can provide us a path to a legalization. So when people ask or when the government say, we need to explore legal options for staying, I think they are wrong because we don't have any legal options. So our hope was because this has been this passed before, so TPS and then you have that path to legalization. And right now we are in the limbo. So I don't have immediate plans, but I think we need to organize, and Congress must act to protect these families, my family. So because we trust to the government, we invest in this country, we raise our families here, we send our kids to college. So our life is here now, and how I can just change that suddenly and they will send me back to El Salvador. And honestly, El Salvador doesn't have the capacity to receive these almost 200,000 people plus their children. So
But during the time that you were here, you had to renew the status about every year and a half, right?
Yes.
You knew all along that the status was called temporary.
Temporary.
And you knew that the possibility was there that you could be sent home.
You know, they never say to us, and that is what I feel betrayed, because they never say to us, okay, we will give you this for 2 years, or next year and a half, they will say, okay, two more years. We never know. So we put in all our confidence in the government, the U.S. government, and we will renewal. It's just like a formality. So, but our hope, and I think every single TPS holder, their hope was this can be a path for legalization. And they have all our information. They know who we are. So it's not a risk for this government to just leave us here to work honestly and continue our life, because I consider this country now my home.
Alan Gomez, is Irma right when she says that there right now are very few options for regularizing her status, other alternatives to going home?
Yeah, I mean, there's a very, very small number of avenues that they can employ. I mean, they could get married to a U.S. citizen. They can have a relative already in the U.S. sponsor them for some kind of visa, but that would require them to go back home, reapply, and quite frankly, if they had that option, they probably would have used it already. So yeah, there's very few options for them, and so now what you have are tens of thousands of families having the same debate in their minds that Irma was just describing. Do I go back to El Salvador or do I risk staying in the United States and becoming an undocumented immigrant?
Because, a lot of the early reporting said the Trump administration has given them until 2019 to either go home or change their status, making it sound like it's really an option. But from what you're saying, it doesn't sound like it is.
Oh, right. Yeah. I mean, those are definitely the two options available to them. I wouldn't want to venture a guess as to what percentage of that population can qualify for some other kind of relief, but it's very, very small.
Irma, do you have a lawyer?
Yes, I do. I have been working with different lawyers, and since I work in the community as well, we have been providing some legal immigration clinics to our residents. And, it's not a way, personally, I can stay here, even though the chance my daughter can become a legal permanent resident, I have to wait 3 years. So I don't have even enough time for that. So it is hard, and you will find a mix families and with a different immigration status, so that is harder because maybe mom is a U.S. citizen and the children as well, but dad has a TPS and doesn't give you the chance to become a U.S. legal resident.
That's Irma Flores, a Salvadoran immigrant with temporary protected status. Irma, thanks for joining us. Good luck.
Thank you for having me.
We're discussing yesterday's decision by the Trump administration to end TPS for 200,000 Salvadorans. I'm Ray Suarez. This is On Point.
How much would you pay to avoid morning traffic? Why are plane tickets to Boise so expensive? And what can a tuna cannery in the middle of the Pacific tell us about taxes? I'm Cardiff Garcia, co-host of The Indicator, a new podcast from Planet Money, where in every episode, we take on a new, unexpected idea to help you make sense of the day's news. Get it on NPR One or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Ray Suarez. We're talking about yesterday's announcement by the Department of Homeland Security that it won't renew temporary protected status for Salvadoran immigrants. Demonstrators quickly assembled outside the White House yesterday to protest the Trump administration's decision to end the residency permits that have allowed about 200,000 Salvadoran immigrants to live in the U.S. since 2001. Here the protesters chant, "Si se puede," or roughly, "Yes, we can." You can join the conversation. Is the Trump administration unfairly targeting immigrant communities? Should these people be sent back if it was determined that conditions have improved in their home country? From Boston, Massachusetts, Tito is on the line. Tito, welcome to On Point.
It looks like a good program around this issue. I would like to have my own opinion. I live in Boston, and I really think it's an act of a cruel act against the families, because thinking about your children, how they feel going to school knowing that they're going to be separated from their parents, from their mother, they're going to be deported, they hear all this news, what effect do that have in thousands of children or those immigrants who are under TPS? I think it's really, really a dangerous path for all Americans, because if you don't like your child to be harmed, why you're going to implement policies that are going to harm your children? I don't understand that.
And as Tito mentions, it is a large number of American citizen children that we're talking about here. Alan Gomez, just before the break, mentioning it was close to 200,000, almost the same number as the Salvadorans living under temporary status themselves. Tito, thanks for your call. We'll go next to Macomb, Michigan. Damon's on the line. Damon, welcome to On Point.
Hello, Ray. My question is, how long has this been enacted? It's a temporary situation.
Ah, good question.
It's been a few years.
16 years.
So 15 years. So this is before I even got out of high school. So for 15 years, I've grown up. I've made my way, paved my way. And these people are here not illegally, but on a temporary status. So how, after 15 years, can they say it's like a cruel thing? I don't understand how it's Trump's fault that Congress hasn't acted to help these people. It was enacted before Trump was ever voted into presidency, and he's getting blamed for just following the law.
Well, sometimes in politics, Damon, it's not a question of right versus wrong as much as right versus right. These families, every 18 months, went back and re-upped their status for the coming 18 months. And in the meanwhile, as the years stretched on, they got on with their lives. They own businesses, they own homes, they have jobs, and they have citizen children. Yes, it's true. You're right. It's been a temporary status all along, and on one level, maybe they shouldn't be surprised, but on the same token, is it right after 16 years to say, okay, we just decided, now you've got 18 months to get out?
But the problem is they keep blaming Donald Trump. You know, it's Congress's fault, not the president's fault. He's just enacting something that was already there. You know, they need to switch the focus from who's, you know, the big mouthpiece up there to actually who's making the decisions and voting on this.
That's a fair comment. Damon, thanks for your call from Macomb, Michigan. I'm joined by Alan Gomez, immigration reporter for USA Today. And I want to turn now to Shannon Dooling, a reporter for WBUR here in Boston, who covers immigration. In 2014, she reported from El Salvador on the violence in that country. Shannon Dooling, welcome to On Point.
Thank you. Hi, Ray.
The United States government had to make a determination that the conditions are much improved in El Salvador. What did you see when you were down there?
When we traveled down there in 2014, we saw extreme poverty. Before seeing things, it was what I felt, really, what I remember. It was this just sort of overwhelming sense of anxiety among people. You know, it was you could feel it in the cab driver. You could feel it in the people that were shopping for groceries. You could feel it at the hotel, just sort of people looking over their shoulder. And, you know, I had traveled to other developing countries before that. And you're always aware of your belongings and not being too flashy with your camera and things like that. But this was different. This was tangibly different. It was a nervous, sort of anxious vibe down there. And of course, you see the visible marks of the MS-13 and 18th Street gang rivalry. You see, you know, you turn one corner and it's a different tag for a different gang. You turn the other corner and it's a different territory. So the presence is definitely felt down there.
Well, El Salvador is a troubled country. It's been a troubled country for decades. Alan Gomez, before the break, was mentioning that the Trump administration has sort of narrowed the parameters of what it takes into account. If people were here because of the damage to the country following an earthquake, that's what you look at. Roads, houses, sewer systems, and so on. Is the country rebuilt? Is it able to handle a couple of scores of thousands of people coming back?
Right. I think the answer to that probably depends on whom you're asking. And you know, our congressman here in Massachusetts, Michael Capuano, was part of crafting the legislation for temporary protected status. And he mentioned yesterday when the news came out that the law in and of itself is about protection, not about duration. And so it's up to the Department of Homeland Security Secretary, who makes these determinations, to factor in protection of people. But it's interesting. I mean, I think it's you know, reflective of immigration, the state of immigration in our country right now. Everyone wants things to be black and white, but that's not what this topic is. People live in these shades of gray, right? So we have a law. The law says that, you know, you have to consider the conditions on the ground that are reflective of that precipitating event, that those earthquakes, or in the case of Honduras, the hurricane. And so when the Department of Homeland Security senior administration officials yesterday were asked this, you know, what about this pervasive gang violence that's been tormenting the people of El Salvador? The response was, that's not a factor that we're considering. That is not a factor we're considering. We're looking at, has the country recovered from the destruction that is related to that to those 2001 earthquakes?
What about the Irmas in this area?
Yeah.
Are there a lot of people that we're talking about who just went on and started American lives?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it's, you know, it's similar sort of to you know, a couple of the different sort of immigration statuses or programs that lend themselves to this. You know when you're signing up that this is temporary. This is a temporary protection status. Then it's right in the name. But after 16, 17, 18 years, your life here starts to feel permanent. And the renewal of that status is sort of a formality at some point, until all of a sudden you're, you know, very sort of crudely awoken to the fact that, oh, wow, this is actually the reality. This is my life. And so, you know, immigrant advocates in Massachusetts are talking about this fear of people like the Irma Floreses of the world reverting back into the shadows. They've come out. They've given the government their information. They have their addresses. And, you know, I was talking to people yesterday who said, I'm not going to be able to work at the current place that I'm working at. I'm not going to be able to, the hotel that I'm working at where I clean rooms, they're not going to hire me without that federal employment authorization. So what am I going to do? Maybe I'll, you know, clean homes under the table. Maybe their first instinct isn't always that they're going to leave. It's, how do I stay in some instances? And that's going to drive more people under the shadows, into the shadows. And there's a whole nother ripple effect to be seen from that.
Here's then Homeland Security Secretary, now White House Chief of Staff, John Kelly, in June, declaring temporary protected status permits were always meant to expire.
By definition, TPS is temporary, meant to be temporary. It's not meant to be forever.
And there's the tension, isn't it,
yeah,
Shannon?
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
Because people, when you re-up, you don't say, well, I'm not going to start this business. I'm not going to get this job. I'm not going to send my kid to a new school.
Exactly. And that's not what the U.S. government would ask of people either. I mean, you know, we have this this spirit of entrepreneurial, you know, this entrepreneurial spirit it sort of ingrained in the American way of life and working hard and having two or three jobs. And that's what immigrants have gone out and done while they have this temporary protected status. It's a really difficult position to be in.
We're joined now by Jose Miguel Cruz, the director of research at the Latin American and Caribbean Center at Florida International University in Miami. He's Salvadoran, an expert on his home country. Jose Miguel, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Ray. Happy to be here.
What's the buzz now inside the community? What are people talking about, their options, what they plan to do? What's the reaction?
Well, the reaction is of sadness and sort of desperation, in the sense that many people don't see going back to El Salvador as a real option, right? As Shannon was saying, possibilities and options in El Salvador, job opportunities, the overall conditions in El Salvador are dire. People don't see, Salvadorians here living in the United States don't see that as a potential way to improve their lives or even carry on with their lives, because it becomes a matter of survival once they are in El Salvador. So the reactions are people are sad, people are very anxious about this decision. They certainly are weighing their options, but in general, I will say most of them are not really considering going back to El Salvador because of the conditions down there.
It's interesting that you say that, because earlier in the conversation, it sounds like there aren't a lot of other options.
Yeah, but for the Salvadorans who are here, remember, many of them came here because of the earthquakes. But they didn't go back in part because of the conditions that Shannon just described, high levels of violence, few job opportunities, few economic opportunities. So they don't see that, as I said before, they don't see that as an option. Well, here they have jobs, they have a life, they have a house, most of them they have homes, they have settled here, they have families here. And for many of them, going back to El Salvador will mean basically tearing apart their families, right? Because their kids, their relatives who were born here, they won't go back to El Salvador if they have jobs here, right? So that creates a huge problem, not only for this community, for our community here in El Salvador, but also for Salvadorians in El Salvador, and in general also for the United States government, because you will have, what you're going to have is more instability in El Salvador, in Central America, since there are no opportunities, more people will be keep pushing to get out of El Salvador. Remember, El Salvador is a very small country, overpopulated country, and we have always, Salvadorians have been always searching for opportunities abroad, not in the United States, but in many other countries, because there are so few opportunities in the country.
It's a good thing that you remind us that this will have dire consequences for El Salvador as well. Alan Gomez, remittances from the TPS holders in the United States have been a pretty big factor in the domestic economy back in El Salvador, haven't they?
Absolutely. I mean, you look at any of these Central American countries and obviously Mexico as well, and those remittances that these folks working in the United States send back are instrumental. They help build homes. They help families survive down there. And just adding to this idea of what El Salvador will be facing is that the administration has also been cutting back on the aid that we provide to a lot of these Central American countries. So, you know, if you're the El Salvadoran government right now, you're faced with the prospect of you getting less to help from the U.S. government, less help to improve your security situation, to improve your judicial systems. And then now we're going to throw another, 100,000, 200,000. I don't know how many people will end up going back, but having that many people go back to the country, and it puts them in an incredibly difficult position, sort of compounding what's already a very difficult situation down there.
Dan's with us now from Boston, Massachusetts. Welcome, Dan.
Thank you for taking my call.
What's on your mind, Dan?
Well, I wanted to put in kind of a view from a millennial liberal, and I've really enjoyed hearing the different views today, and I appreciated your comment talking about politics as sometimes good versus good. It seems in this case, I'm seeing the Trump administration kind of as the bad guy, but they at the same time are creating an environment in which something needs to change, in which progressives need to craft a more permanent solution that will allow these people to stay. And I see the enemy at the gate, but temporary status and as not a viable solution. So something needs to be done, and now it really needs to be done because we have the highest office in the land directly targeting.
Shannon Dooling, talk directly to Dan's point that really there's been a lot of either failure or sort of slow walking on a policy level. These people and their needs have not been addressed for a really long time.
It's true, for a very long time. And, you know, again, we're hearing from the Department of Homeland Security that, look, our hands are tied. We're just doing what this law, what the temporary protected status dictates. We're evaluating conditions on the ground in these countries. And it's they're really passing the buck here to Congress and saying the only way to create a permanent solution for people with temporary protected status is to legislate a solution. By law, only Congress can give any sort of permanent status to non-U.S. citizens.
John writes, 20 years is a long time for temporary. If it doesn't stay temporary, there will be more resistance for letting in people in the future who need temporary assistance. There are valid and compassionate arguments for making it permanent, and Congress should decide this rather than having presidential administrations extending or ending the status. Jeff writes, what about the long history of the U.S.'s abuses in El Salvador and Central America. And Ray in Vermont adds, do we have any sort of employment information on this group? Yes, about 97% have jobs. Part of that is that they're very hardworking, but part of it is also the time of life. It's during peak work years that most of these people find themselves. They mostly fall between 20 and 45 years old. What is their profile, if we do, and is there any sort of push from the business community or industries which may be employing them? Well, certainly there has been reporting that certain industries will be affected in the communities where there's a large presence of Salvadoran immigrants. Shannon Dooling, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
WBUR's own Shannon Dooling. We're discussing the Trump administration's move to end temporary protected status. I'm Ray Suarez. This is On Point.
Each and every morning, there are a whole lot of places you can look for news. Try this instead, though. Listen to Up First. Up First is the morning news podcast from NPR. One tap, and 10 minutes later, you have started the day informed. Find Up First on the NPR One app and wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Ray Suarez. We're discussing yesterday's move to end temporary protected status for about 200,000 Salvadoran immigrants. The Trump administration made similar moves last year that affected Haitians and Nicaraguans. You can join the conversation should people be forced to return to violent, unstable countries, even if that's not what sent them here in the first place. I'm talking with Alan Gomez, immigration reporter at USA Today, and Jose Miguel Cruz, director of research at the Latin American and Caribbean Center at Florida International University. As we've mentioned, tens of thousands of Haitians have already lost their TPS status. Joining me now from New York to share that perspective is Marie Adolphe. Welcome to On Point.
Hi, Ray. Thank you.
Well, it's been several months now since the declaration on Haitians. What have you and tens of thousands of other people affected by the change done in the meantime?
Since the decision has been made, we have been working on getting our status changed to permanent resident status. We've been working on asking Congress. We have two bills in Congress. We have a bill in Congress and we have a bill in the Senate right now that it would provide TPS holders, not just Haitians, all TPS holders currently, even the ones who've had it in the past, to be able to change their status to permanent.
Are you optimistic about those? Because we've been hearing earlier in the program that it's not looking that good for people who want to stay who were here under TPS.
I'm not optimistic because it hasn't been moving in the sense of like what we would like to see done. But we know that it's the right thing for to do. It's the right thing for Congress. It's the right thing for the administration to do. So that's why we're pushing for it. We know with all the different difficulties we have to deal with. So we're hoping for the best out of this one.
Have you heard of people through the grapevine in your community who have managed to change their status, who are going to be able to stay?
No, I haven't. Because it's not as it's very difficult to change their status. Because if there were a lot of opportunities, a lot of people would have taken to be able to change their status. It's really difficult unless you have a sibling or you have you are married a spouse to change your status. The possibilities are very short.
The cause that allowed Haitians to remain under TPS was the terrible earthquake centered on Port-au-Prince. I've been in Haiti since the earthquake. Things are not great there. If you have to go back, what do you have in mind?
Well, I don't have an option. Going back is not an option for me. I came here when I was 11 years old. I came with my my family, who we've been here since the year 2000. I went to high school here. I went to college. I paid for my college education here. My family have worked in this country. We pay our taxes. We also have, I have siblings who are American citizens who were born here, who are under the age of 18. So it's not an option for us. We can't leave. You know, my father is considering, but he can't leave the three minors behind. Where would we leave them with?
Well, it doesn't sound like a great situation, and it doesn't sound like there are a lot of good answers. Marie Adolphe, a Haitian living in the U.S. under TPS, it's been rescinded for the Haitian community. She spoke to me from New York. Thanks a lot. Good luck, Marie.
Thank you.
Alan Gomez and Jose Miguel Cruz are still with me. Let's go to Omaha, Nebraska. Kelly's on the line. Kelly, welcome to the program.
Hi. I have two questions. One of them is, it's more of a point in that I heard in the list of countries that Sudan is one of them. And I know that there have been horrible atrocities that these people have suffered. And for them to return to that country would be, they've already been so traumatized. And I'm ignorant on this, and I'd like more information about how far back are they, does this go? You know, it's a preposterous idea, but I'm pretty sure that the Irish came here from a potato famine. I know it wouldn't go back that far, but how far back can this go to where people are no longer protected?
That's a question for Alan Gomez. Alan, you can hear Kelly's consternation. I mean, are we getting ready to send people back to Sudan and South Sudan, arguably some of the worst places on the planet?
Yeah, I mean, to answer the first question, temporary protected status was created at 1990. So this program only goes back that far. But some countries that were added to the list very soon thereafter. In respects to Sudan specifically, they first got on the list back in 1997 when the country was splitting and they were going through the civil war. But that is one of the countries where the Trump administration has decided to end it. There are about 1,000 people in the U.S. right now currently with TPS. And so they have a November deadline to leave the country. They're the first ones that got to get out. So, yeah, even though the initial declaration was based on the civil war that was ongoing in Sudan in the late 90s, it's the Trump administration has decided that the conditions from that specific conflict have been resolved to the point that no longer warrants a temporary protected status. Even though the country may still be incredibly violent, those may be for different reasons, according to the Trump administration.
Thanks for your call from Omaha, Nebraska. We'll go to Boston next. Peter, welcome to the program.
Yes, hi, Ray. Yeah, listen, I just preface my remarks. I mean, if I feel bad for all these people, and just one comment. I heard Kelly. I'm about fourth, fifth generation of Irish that came over to Boston and right before the Civil War, and they came over and they were handed rifles to fight in the Union Army and work. I mean, and that's what I think a lot of these immigrants came over back then. There was no welfare. 1890s, 1900s came over and worked. My question, I guess I have is this: is I absolutely feel bad. However, if and I'm reluctant with Trump, I just could not vote for Hillary because it was open borders. My question is: nobody who comes here wants to leave, and I totally understand that. Their countries are generally rat holes; they don't want to stay there. They want to come here and get free stuff. I totally get that. However, you know, we have immigration, and here we are trying to help these people in these catastrophic storms, take them in, and once they get here, nobody wants to go back. What do you hear? Everybody who goes back is either going to be, if a woman, she's going to be raped, and the kid's going to be in a drug gang. I mean, it's totally, I understand it. But that's what's projected. Nobody can ever come back. You know, question I have with the Salvadorans, hey, they've made money. Geez, maybe if you can't stay, you go back, you liquidate, you can at least go back with some cash. You can probably buy a lot of things. But the question in the future I have is, do we stop? Again, is it open immigration? Do we not have borders?
And well, Peter, let me jump in there because I understand your consternation. I understand your frustration. But I got to say, you lost me at free stuff. Because a lot of Americans think that people like those living here under temporary protected status come here and get loads of free stuff. They aren't eligible for much of anything. You're not paying to support these people. They're homeowners. They're workers. 97% of them are employed. It's not a free stuff situation, though I understand your frustration about borders and who gets to stay here and what the rules are. And yes, when a lot of people come here, they do want to stay. Jose Miguel, what would you say to Peter from Boston?
Yeah, I would disagree with this idea that they are, you know, they come here, you know, for free stuff. Actually, they are hard workers. They have two, three jobs. they are all, you know, overemployed. They contribute to the country in terms of taxes, in terms of investments and homes and in new job opportunities. And they are really, you know, in sometimes even in hard conditions because they are pretty much closely surveyed by the government here, and despite that, they keep thriving and doing well here in the United States. The problem is that if they go back also to El Salvador, and even they take money and they try to invest something over there, the conditions over there are so difficult, you know, with very low security, that basically they're going to lose the investment in a couple of months. So that is not an option. And also you have to see this from a strategic point of view. I mean, it's in the interest of the United States to have stability in Central America. And throwing these Salvadorians out back to a country that is not in conditions to receive them basically only will increase the instability in Central America and pushing more people out and putting more pressure on the border and in different communities in the United States.
Franklin, Tennessee is next. Victoria, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Ray. Thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I just had a comment and a question. I have a blended status family, so my husband is a DACA recipient, and I am Mexican-American. My family has been here in Texas since before 1840s. But I'm really outraged by this. I feel like, why now? Why now? Why is this now? If it's been in order for 18 years, the Haitians, why now? Why is this going on right now? So to me, it feels like a direct attack on the immigrants, the hardworking immigrants in this country. So I'm outraged by this, and I stand with my immigrant brothers and sisters here, and I advocate for them. And my question is, what is the government, is there any talk at all from the government that is going to provide some type of provisions or assistance for all the job losses that's going to happen, housing that's going to happen, children that are going to be staying behind, or just the fact that parents are going to lose their status to work, which is going to be a financial detriment for the families? What, and specifically the kids, what is the government going to do about that? Is there any talks?
That's a great question, Victoria. Let's go to Alan Gomez. If you have minor children who are U.S. citizens, does it give you any sort of grounding in America? Does it stave off the possibility of being sent home? Or if you go home, is there somebody here who has responsibility for those citizen children?
Under the current framework of TPS, there is absolutely no consideration given to what the status of your family is, whether you have U.S. citizen children, anything like that. And the practice of the Trump administration since they've taken office has hasn't been favorable to maintaining the integrity of these families. We hear about these mixed families that are getting broken up. The administration has been increasing arrests of undocumented immigrants across the country. And we're hearing so many tales of, you know, parents being sent back and leaving their children behind. I remember years ago when deportations were really picking up under the Obama administration, where undocumented immigrants were actually writing out living wills to lay out what would happen to their U.S. citizen children if they are deported. Some would go with family, but many ended up in the foster system in the U.S. So that's going to be a reality, unfortunately, for a lot of these Salvadorans, where if they choose to stay in the country, there will become undocumented immigrants. And if they're picked up and deported, then, right, what happens to that child? Do you try to get them back to El Salvador with you, even though the kid has been raised here, may not speak Spanish, may not know the first thing about El Salvador? Or do you make preparations so that they're left behind with some relative or somebody else?
Cedar Rapids, Iowa is next. Eric, welcome to the program.
Hi. I got a quick comment and then a question. I said, you can call, you know, an apple an orange. It doesn't make it so. This program isn't temporary anymore, you know, after 16 years. And I would argue that these immigrants actually appreciate American values more than those who are wanting to send them back. And my question is, what is to be gained? What is the driving force to end the TPS program? Is it to appease his base? Is there a cost savings that we're not hearing about? What is the driving force?
Well, Eric, since you're here, let me turn that question back on you. What do you make of this? The Trump administration has been pretty consistent, and it's been in office just about a year now. Between the pardon of Joe Arpaio, who openly and admittedly profiled suspects based on their ethnic origin, is this not an accident, not an unintended consequence, but a signal? And to make it clear, not only to people or in the rest of the world, but people in the United States, that the U.S. is now a different place for immigrants.
Yes, I agree with everything you said. And that's what scares me, is this whole process that we've been going through since Trump has taken office, to me, seems un-American at its core. Almost everything that has happened since he's gone into office. And that's what I just don't get. I don't get where the support is coming from to even allow something like this to happen. Because, I mean, there's got to be some cost. It usually comes back to money or politics or his base. But I'm not hearing anybody talk about why now? Why are they doing it?
Earlier in the program, Eric, Alan Gomez mentioned that the United States, and it has been reported that the United States is in the middle of a transition. The Trump administration wants to make it a more merit-based system for accepting people from the rest of the world. And this may be one of the steps in that gradual transition. Let me give you a couple of comments. North of the Border writes, I'll bet Canada will invite these Salvadorans to come here. They're no longer typical refugees. They speak English. They have skills. They've learned or improved since they came. And like all immigrants, they're hard workers. But Lindsay writes, does temporary mean nothing? Charles writes, beggar thy neighbor. What happens when the United States needs a good neighbor? But Jim answers, is a natural disaster worse than horrible gang activity? What about some mercy? And Merlin writes, I'm an immigrant, legally migrated and now a citizen for about 16 years. However, I believe it is better in the long term to resettle refugees in their own countries and make them comfortable over there in their own homeland rather than bring them over here and then kick them out after they've created a life here with children born here. Jose Miguel Cruz is the director of research at the Latin American and Caribbean Center at Florida International University. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Ray.
And Alan Gomez, immigration reporter from USA Today. Always glad to have you with us.
Thanks, Ray.
You can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter. Find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. Coming up tomorrow, America has a teacher shortage that's expected to keep on growing. Do the solutions shortchange American students? I'm Ray Suarez. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR.